This is Economics for Entrepreneurs, the podcast where we apply the principles of economics to help you start, grow, and manage your business. Here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. Recently, we talked with Trini Amador about the concept of highest values as an overarching goal that guides choices throughout life. You could call it a purpose. At Economics for Entrepreneurs, we believe in the values that entrepreneurship brings to people's lives and to society. Jesus Huerta de Soto, the great Spanish economist who writes about and teaches the dynamic entrepreneurial system, says that the most just society is the one that best unleashes the creative energies of its entrepreneurs, because they're driven to serve others and make others' lives better. The ideal society is one where everyone follows the economic way of being an entrepreneur, and no one chooses the political way. De Soto defines entrepreneurship much more broadly than being a business owner or an independent contractor or founding a startup. For him, entrepreneurship is the fundamental human behavior of observing and alertly recognizing a need on another's part. De Soto calls these needs social adjustments, and springing into action to resolve that need, to make a new adjustment that results in a better set of circumstances. It's this entrepreneurial action of continuous mutual adjustment to each other that results in society, in human collaboration, and in civilization. Without entrepreneurship, there could be no society and no social peace. Government and political intervention in this process of entrepreneurship is an attack that leaves us all worse off, because the continuous mutual adjustment process is inhibited, constrained, sometimes broken. Social peace is placed at risk. As always, the right level of analysis for these matters is the individual level. If everyone were an entrepreneur and applied the entrepreneurial spirit of serving others through the mutual adjustment process, then a better society would emerge. If more and more of us choose to be entrepreneurs, we can enjoy a better life, make life better for others, and make the world better at the same time. Today, we're talking to C.J. Engel. CJ is a successful entrepreneur in the field of digital technologies and business systems that are built on those technologies. He's also a writer and a publisher at the intersection of economics and libertarian studies. CJ, hello.
Great to be here, Hunter.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about the entrepreneurial life today, and you live that. You're a successful entrepreneur. You've been an entrepreneur since you were 18, maybe before that. So let's just start by giving listeners a summary of your entrepreneurial origin story, how you became an entrepreneur, just a kind of high level of what the journey's been like, maybe some sense of the ups and downs, and what kind of projects you're working on today, just briefly so that they can understand your context.
Yeah, I think in some ways I've always had that side of me, and it's interesting that I say that because I've always thought of myself as very much risk averse. You know, I want to avoid uncertainty, and I like the steadiness, and I like to know the future. So it's funny that in retrospect, I think of myself as entrepreneurial. But as you said, you know, since I was a young age and even in college, I was always coming up with new ways to survive. Back then, you know, I had to do things and be creative, given my heavy schedule with sports and academics and everything. So I've always had my hand in something. And then, of course, once I graduated, it had to be a little bit more official as I was married young and started having kids immediately and needed something a little bit more stable in that sense. And so I've had a consulting business for quite a few years, and that's kind of been my bread and butter since I had graduated from college. And we did a lot of project management consulting and short-term and medium-term consulting for a variety of different types of projects and technical installs and things of that nature. And then I've dabbled elsewhere over time as new technologies have come out and new opportunities come my way. I play around and just have fun with it. I mean, that's one of the aspects of entrepreneurship that I would love to discuss today is just the ability to create, to try things, to fail and succeed, and see how I develop as a person through all of that.
Well, that's great. And that's a good place to start. We think of it as the foundational basics in economics. We've talked about ends and means. And you mentioned a few ends there that were about your lifestyle and having fun and creating things. And the means is entrepreneurship. So when you made the choice to be an entrepreneur, did you think about the ends or the goals that you were pursuing? And you selected entrepreneurship as a means to those ends? Or did it emerge over time? How do you think about entrepreneurial ends?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the way I would answer that is definitely to mention the fact that there are a lot of entrepreneurs that do make that sort of their goal in life. They want to be entrepreneurial. They don't want to have, a paycheck style source of income. And I didn't think about it before I started. I just kind of started doing things and realized that in the course of my trying things, I could actually derive an income from my activities. And so I didn't think of myself as trying to be an entrepreneur. It was kind of a retrospective, I suppose I am an entrepreneur because I'm doing it in this way. And I am, so to speak, my own boss, which is the phrase, and I know we're going to get to that, but I was sort of my own boss. I was doing things in accordance with whatever I wanted to do, whatever opportunities I saw. So it wasn't something that I had chosen and set out to be. It's something that just came about naturally over the course of my discovering things and meeting people. Of course, a lot of the creativity that comes to mind and the opportunities that I've been confronted with have really just come about by meeting people and seeing what their needs are and how I can help arrange the resources and skill sets that I have in my life to meet those needs.
And there's a values component to that, I think. Not value, but values. We talked in an earlier episode about highest values that people strive after. And we talked about conceptual ones like a world of peace or a world of beauty or family security. You talked about that a little bit. Or a sense of achievement or an exciting life. And different people have different values that they're pursuing. So did that sense of values get into your thinking at all, CJ? And how might you help other entrepreneurs to think in that way?
I don't think initially those were on the front of my mind, but I think now they are. I think once you get to a point where you begin to reflect more on, I mean, entrepreneurship is something that you can't plan your entire life ahead. When you're an entrepreneur, and especially when you're just starting new businesses and you're trying to determine what works and what does not work, I mean, any long-term plans that you have can quickly shift and push you into other directions. So I think now that I've sort of gotten used to that lifestyle of identifying new opportunities and pursuing them, I think, now that I'm used to that and I'm kind of, I've kind of sunken in to that lifestyle, I can think about, grander things, a world of beauty and the family security, leaving a legacy. I mean, I have three kids that are born and one on the way. And so, that's obviously that long-term legacy is interesting to me as well. What can I do not only, in a direct way to help, raise them and give back to that legacy, but also indirectly too. What kind of world do I want them to be in, and what can I do to help make that in my own small way? And that's one of the great things about entrepreneurship is you don't have to sit at the top and arrange the world from the essentially plan the world on behalf of them. You can contribute something small. And when you have thousands or tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of other entrepreneurs doing the same thing around the world, that's the type of social development that, we can leave a legacy behind, even without knowing each other and even without, planning and coordinating directly. There's that spontaneous order that comes about. But because of entrepreneurs and because of their recognition of needs in society, and as we build them and develop them, that has beneficial effects for, my children, but also the children of everybody else in society, whether or not they're actually entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I think that's an exciting and an inspiring idea that entrepreneurs create a better world, not by intentionally trying to create a better world, but by trying to serve other people and make those individuals' lives better, and then the whole system becomes better. And I think that's a big theme. Before we go there, though, CJ, in the economics literature, it's recognized that entrepreneurship is an arduous task. In fact, Huerta de Soto talks about the definition of entrepreneur as undertaking valiantly the arduous task. And Mises refers to the entrepreneur as a hero in the sense of, you've described it, of the social system. So does an entrepreneur have to think that way? It's going to be arduous and I've got to be valiant. I've got to be courageous. Is that part of the mindset?
Well, I think whether or not he starts off thinking of himself as heroic or thinking of himself as having to dig in and do the arduous work, he's going to discover it very quickly, you know, and everybody's in a different place and trying to do different things. I mean, the tasks that Elon Musk, for example, sets his eyes on, you know, going to outer space, creating colonies out there, that's a little bit more arduous, than, you know, setting up a little consulting shop. So I think in our own small ways, we all have to consider the trade-offs, you know, the costs and benefits of being entrepreneurial. And sometimes not all of us have the gut, have the mentality to pursue something like Elon Musk, even for those that perhaps have more capital than him, or even for those that are smarter than him. Not all of us have that mentality that can push through and pursue those big things. But one of the great things about entrepreneurship that I would emphasize and I would really want people to understand is you don't have to be the next Rockefeller. You don't have to have a technology like, you know, a Microsoft or an Amazon or something that completely changes the world forever in order to be an entrepreneur. I mean, entrepreneurs are all around us, and a lot of them we don't even know or recognize. We meet them on a day-to-day basis, and we don't even know that they're entrepreneurs. Just doing something in your own small way based on the skills and resources that you have at your disposal is entrepreneurial, and it does benefit those around us. And so in that sense, it is heroic. I think that entrepreneurs are, you know, we think of entrepreneurs, and in this day and age, to play that entrepreneurial role, to pursue profit, is really looked down upon, and it's really spoken about with such harsh language. And I think that there needs to be a social or cultural shift in the way we interpret the entrepreneurs in our society, because they are the ones that bring forth the better world that all of us, you know, want to live in.
One of the pieces of language that is friendlier is that the idea of profit is a signal from consumers and therefore from society in general that the entrepreneur is bringing value, that they're using the resources available to them and to the world in the most productive and efficient fashion. And the signal from society for that is a profit. So we have to, as you say, make profit a positive idea. And that's both monetary profit, which is accounting, but also psychic profit, that the consumer gets a psychic profit and the entrepreneur in reflection gets a psychic profit.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I wrote on recently. I had a short piece on the Mises Wire that talked about the fact that, you know, we talk about whether or not billionaires need to give their fair share, to give back to society is the phrase that we always hear. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, in the course of their making money, they had to provide real goods and services that consumers actually valued higher than the dollar amount that they spent on those goods and services. And so you're exactly right that the entrepreneurial role is, in fact, that profit-seeking role is, in fact, socially beneficial. And when the capitalist chooses activities that consumers don't want, there's already a built-in consequence for that, and it's called a loss. And so capitalists, they're aware of the fact that if they make the wrong decision, if they don't satisfy the desires and needs of consumers, they're going to suffer a financial consequence for that. We don't need, you know, it's such a great feedback mechanism that the market has. We don't need a government bureaucrat to come in and give them a financial consequence for not serving the consumers. They already have that consequence, and it's called a loss, and they hate losses, and so they do their best to avoid them.
Right. And again, in economic language, and we have to do better, I think, in business language, but that's a concept that the economists call uncertainty. We don't have a knowledge of the future. We can't have a knowledge of the future. And the consumer we're serving may be changing while we're developing our production. So there's uncertainty, and the economists talk about embracing uncertainty. That's the job of the entrepreneur. I had an interesting conversation with Jim Clifton from Gallup, who developed a lot of research about entrepreneurs and their mindset. And he said, yeah, they embrace uncertainty. He called it a special relationship with uncertainty, but they're smart enough to mitigate the risk through smart decision making. And so that relationship works for them. Yes, there's uncertainty, but I know how to handle it. Does that resonate with you?
Absolutely. I think so. And it's one of those things that it's a learning process. And I think you become better and you develop your own person and how you as an individual with your background and skill sets and even personality develops over time to handle situations of uncertainty in different ways. And I know that's one of the things you and I have talked about in the past is always being aware of who you are and how you handle those situations, because there's no strict blueprint set of instructions that if someone wants to be an entrepreneur, they have to follow in the exact same way. Everybody is a little bit different and everybody handles situations of uncertainty differently. And I think there needs to be a constant self-awareness about what they need to do to overcome and handle situations of uncertainty.
Some people believe that entrepreneurs have a special set of characteristics or personal attributes. Jim Clifton talked about this risk mitigation and a bias for action. They want to do something. Bob Luddy talked about it on this podcast as brutal determination. You've got to get through the tough parts and always believe and always get there. What I'd like to ask is, do you believe that there is a special set of characteristics and attributes for the entrepreneur, and they should examine themselves at the outset? Or do you believe that anybody can do it? It's just having the right way of discovering what's right for them.
I lean more toward the latter. And I think the reason for that is just self-reflection. You know, I've always had more of a ivory tower mindset. You know, I love theory more than anything. And yet here I am, you know, doing things, being active. And so I don't think that one needs to have a particular personality. Obviously, everyone has weaknesses. And in order to be a successful businessman or businesswoman, you need to recognize those weaknesses and build on them. You know, being courageous and learning to negotiate and interact with people. I mean, if you can't deal with people, you're not going to be a very good entrepreneur in some ways. But, you know, in other ways, there's other gaps that you can fill. I mean, especially with the rise of the internet, people can make, you know, a lot of money, which means providing a lot of value without ever, you know, directly talking or interacting with people just via the internet. So as technology progresses, as the market progresses, I think people can adapt to those situations and their personality is becoming less of a hindrance than perhaps it was in the past.
Yeah, I don't personally believe in the concept of strengths and weaknesses. I think that's something that's been created by HR departments and business schools and so on like that to intimidate us. But the other thing an entrepreneur can do, and you've done this brilliantly, is assemble a team that is balanced. So it's not about strengths and weaknesses, but it has all of the capabilities that the firm requires. And in this day and age, you can assemble that team in many new ways. You don't have to hire people. You can get them to work for you on Upwork or 99 Designs, or you can get Alibaba to put your supply chain together. So in fact, entrepreneurial assembly of the team, or the economists call it assembly of resources, is one of the skills, right, of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. In fact, that's one of the key characteristics of a good entrepreneur is his ability to arrange resources. And one of the resources that he has to arrange are the team members that he puts together, right? So if you're going to, I mean, not only do you have to put together, like if you're going to build a product, you know, you have to assemble or at least arrange all the resources to be in the right place at the right time to actually create the widget or gadget or what have you. But all the individual human beings that are involved, whether they're marketing people or accountants or, you know, even CPAs and things like that, you have to arrange all of them in a certain, based on a certain structure in order to have a successful enterprise. So team building, I mean, is at the core. If you're not good at assembling the team, you're going to be very limited in your ability to build your business.
And we find in venture capital, that's dynamic over time. So the people who are the founders of the business might be brilliant at founding it and getting it off the ground and getting the business model to the point where it can work, but they're not always the same people to manage it and scale it and so on. So the entrepreneur has to know when to change their role.
Yeah, and you know, be willing to delegate to the right people at the right time based on the skill sets that they recognize. And of course, you know, there's even you know, knowledge problems within a firm. You know, there's always that aspect of not, you know, setting up things exactly right, but being able to recognize what human resources you have around you and how they can best be arranged in order to accomplish your various business ends. And as the consumer preferences change, those business ends need to adapt and adopt as well. So, you know, you always need to stay dynamic in the way that you manage the team and recognize when, you know, there's perhaps, you know, other people that need to come in and fill a different role than, you know, previous team members. And so, you know, everything's in flux. The consumer, you know, Mises describes the consumer as making his own decisions at his own whim. If we knew exactly what the consumer want and it was steady forever, running a business would be really easy. But the fact that they're always constantly changing and we have to always pay attention to that means that we always have to be, you know, so we're constantly team building. We're constantly rearranging our resources. It's not something that ever ends.
And you have to be good at letting that information flow through your organization. One of our guests talked about family businesses, and one of their growth challenges is often there's one person at the top of the hierarchy, and maybe that's the founder, and they become an information block. So maybe they've got a way they've been doing things all of their life, and then new information comes from the marketplace and somebody in the firm picks it up, but it can't flow up to the top and back down through decision making. So that information flow is part of what you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, and there's, you know, new technologies and there's new ways of capturing that information. And of course, those technologies make life for the entrepreneur ever easier. I think it's easier to start a business today, you know, than it was even 20 years ago. Just the ability for technology to come in and handle that. I think a lot of people miss that the entrepreneurial journey, the opportunities that we have around us are actually becoming more accessible for
yeah.
people.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that we can assemble the assets and the resources and the expertise that we need so much easier now today. And as you say, keep it flexible, add and subtract and so on. Just one more point on personal style or characteristics. We used to think about the entrepreneur as big on self-reliance. And maybe what we're talking about here today is that given all these resources, given team building, given information flow, you really don't have to be self-reliant. There's so much out there to help you. You don't have to think of yourself as the single person trying to achieve this goal that you've set yourself, but as part of an entrepreneurial network or ecosystem that's there to help all entrepreneurs.
One of the mischaracterizations about the market economy is this idea. I mean, we talk about the rugged individual, you know, and how American life is characterized by rugged individualists. But in so many different senses, the cooperative nature of the market and the ability for resources to be allocated across the structure of production and across time really has sort of a self-supporting element to it in which we all depend on each other, right? Capital is such that it depends on previous stages in the production life. And so there's no capitalist, there's no entrepreneur that's alone. We all rely on each other. And the most important reflection of that reliance are the price signals that come about on the market. I mean, prices themselves are not these, distant things that have little to do with human activity. They are the expression of human preferences. You know, one of the things that I've talked about before is in the 18th century with the publication of Adam Smith and his phrase invisible hand. Well, really what the Austrians unveiled was that the invisible hand is not actually invisible anymore. It's very visible. Well, what is it? It's the price mechanism. That price mechanism allocates resources across time and across industries and across consumer preferences, and it reveals exactly what needs to be allocated and where. And so this price mechanism is the visible hand. It is the thing guiding the market. And so entrepreneurs, via the price mechanism, are connected not only to the resources around them, but also to the humans, to the producers, to the workers, to the other entrepreneurs throughout all of society.
Well, let's stay at that society level. CJ, that's a really fascinating insight about the visible hand through prices. Huerta de Soto, who is one of my favorite economists, says that the most just society is the one that best unleashes the creativity of its entrepreneurs. Because as you say, they're the ones who are striving to achieve the successful act of serving others in society. And as you say, they collaborate with each other. And so this idea of a beneficent society brought about by entrepreneurship is one that I know that you believe in. Can you talk about that a little bit in terms of the entrepreneurial life? You mentioned Adam Smith, and you go back one step from Adam Smith, you get Adam Ferguson, who says that the great institutions are created or emerge, I should say, through human behavior. They're not a result of human design. And entrepreneurship is that human behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, connecting that with, you know, how the benefits that the entrepreneur has for society, I always think of it in terms of, you know, charity. There's a recent essay that I read on this. And what I begin to realize is that the contributions that we make in our capital investments and in our pursuit of profit today, to the extent that they are profitable, to that extent, they benefit society as a whole. So we always talk about, you know, there's this strong narrative today about, you know, the rich in the capitalist class needing to give back to society. And I'm really keen on pointing out that the actual entrepreneurial activity is the giving back. It is the contributions to society that everyone expects them to give. And so in the course of their benefiting society, they are made rich to the extent that they bring value to it. And so, but not only is there an immediate term effect, but when you make society wealthier, you allow them to be more productive. You allow them to spend more leisure time. And so there's always this narrative about capitalist societies that it's so materialistically focused and we need to pursue loftier and more idealistic nature of life and recognize that the good things in life aren't just material. Well, actually, it's capitalism that allows us to do that, because when we're more productive, we don't need to spend as much time, you know, manually working hard to build for ourselves home and clothes and food and all that stuff. We can actually spend more time on so-called, you know, higher ends. And just the idea that we're sitting here having a conversation, you know, philosophizing about the nature of the entrepreneur, just the fact that we have the time to do that, we don't have to be out, milking a cow so that we can actually eat tonight and tomorrow. I mean, that's a result of capital investment over hundreds of years. And the more that we do that today, the more our children and grandchildren and future generations are going to be able to spend even more time doing more leisurely activities.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And thank you for interpreting that essay by F.A. Harper. And I titled it in my head that capital investment beats charity every time. It's a much more productive way to raise society up.
Well, one of the things that Harper points out is that if you're going to define charity by benefiting other people, then if you invest capital, it benefits how many more people does capital investment in the tools and equipment and things like that, how much more charitable is that activity than just giving someone $10. And, you know, and if you're in a situation where someone needs $10 and you give it to them, obviously it's not going to be the end of civilization. But if you think about, if you take a step back and think about, instead of consuming the, you know, the seed corn, but actually investing it and growing it, you can produce so much more for future generations. And that has much more of a, you know, quote unquote, charitable effect than any consumptive activity that we do today.
Do you advise that aspiring entrepreneurs should think that way when they're choosing the entrepreneurial life, or is that for a later self-reflection, as you called it?
Yeah, one of the beauties of capitalism, and I always tell people, is that capitalists don't actually have to understand how capitalism works in order to benefit society. I mean, think about all the the billionaires that you know the Huffington Post will quote about how they endorse raising taxes, right? They don't actually have to realize that the extent to which they're benefiting society to benefit society. All they have to do is continue doing what they're doing, and they could have this idea of a socialist, you know, that socialism is better than capitalism and all these wacky things that actually contradict their own activities. But as long as they're being productive and capitalistic in their activities, they're still benefiting society. So I think that's one of the beauties of capitalism, is you don't actually have to see and recognize the long-term effects of what you're doing. For instance, you could have an incredibly greedy and self-centered, narcissistic capitalist that all he cares about in life is profit. So what is he going to do to make that profit for himself? Well, he's going to double down on his work of making life better for his consumers, right? That's how he's going to get his profit. And so under a market economy, when you're under that structure, the harder you work to profit yourself, the more you're going to have to benefit the consumers around you. So you don't actually have to know the long-term effects of what you're doing in order to benefit society. Now, as a matter of self-reflection, I think it's amazing to recognize exactly the role that entrepreneurs are playing. And I think it's healthy for entrepreneurs to think in terms of the fact that they are benefiting people around them. And they can live their lives accordingly. But as I said, the free market doesn't depend on people being altruistic.
Well, one of our challenges, I think, or let's be positive, one of our opportunities is to communicate that narrative, that story that you just described so eloquently, to get people to understand it. It always seems to me that the socialists are better marketers than than we are. And you've combined entrepreneurship and liberty in your founding of Austro Libertarian Magazine. And it's an extension of what you've done on a website by that same name, Austro Libertarian, for some time. So please tell the listeners about those initiatives and then maybe how it fits into telling the story better.
Well, in some ways, every opportunity that we have to write something down or share an idea with someone is an entrepreneurial activity, you know, and we're seeing a need that needs to be met and we're acting to fulfill that need. And so, of course, you know, an Austro-Libertarian Magazine, even though, getting rich on that is not necessarily my ideal. And if it was my ideal, I probably, I would probably extend those resources elsewhere. But really, it is an entrepreneurial activity. I mean, it's not going to survive for long if the costs are greater than the revenue. And so I have to be entrepreneurial in the way that I arrange my resources to make that something that can sustain the graphic designers, the contributors, the printers, you know, all the various inputs that come into producing a print publication in the 21st century. I have to arrange those in a way that benefits the full life of the publication itself. So Austro-Libertarian Magazine is my way of getting ideas that I hold, not only about entrepreneurship, obviously, but about, you know, all kinds of different social issues, from, you know, war and liberty to the, you know, libertarian property theory and Austrian economics and et cetera. There's so many different issues to talk about. But yeah, I did see a need in the market, in this little niche Austro-libertarian market, for a print publication, which, you know, I talk to a lot of people and they say, wow, a print publication in 2019, is that really, you know, a good use of your resources? And one of the interesting results of, you know, the last couple months of getting it out there is the fact that I'd say between 80 and 85% of the new subscribers have all chosen the print option. You know, so it's just what I thought. People are, there's still demand for print. And, you know, I was, so far, I've been rewarded for my decision to pursue that. And so it is an entrepreneur. It's a risk. People could have, you know, not chosen to sign up. They could have completely rejected it. And I would have, you know, suffered the losses in accordance with it. But yeah, every action that we take, every extension of resources, every investment that we make bears uncertainty. And it's up to us as human beings to figure out how to handle that and leverage it toward our benefit and therefore the benefit of society.
So thinking about Austro-Libertarian magazine on the consumer's side, creating subjective value for the consumer, who should think of themselves as readers? Is this something that entrepreneurs can benefit from, or is it everybody, or who are you thinking about in terms of your readers?
Yeah, that's a good question, and obviously I've had to think about that, you know, quite a bit. But just to be transparent about it, I came to the idea by paying attention to the left socialist publication Jacobin Magazine. They produce a very high quality, aesthetically pleasing print publication magazine. And it's sort of this bridge, this medium between, there's a lot of blogs out there, a lot of articles and free digital content. And a lot of that's good for the layperson, you know, people that are just finding out about their socialist ideas. And then on the other side of the bridge, there's their Catalyst Journal, which is their, you know, Marxist academics. That's where they all write. And the Austro-Libertarian equivalent of the Catalyst Journal is the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics. And so I figured if they, a socialist magazine, can get 50,000 print subscribers to buy that, there has to be at least half that in libertarians who are looking for a midway between, you know, what we could say the Mises Wire, you know, blogs and articles that are for the layperson, and the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics. There's still demand for print. There's people that want to sit by the fire in the evenings or sit outside without technology, the distractions and burdens of technology. I mean, people are getting tired of constant media. And of course, that's always, I mean, from here on out, it looks like, you know, digital media is going to be the best place to communicate ideas. But there does seem to be a demand for taking a break from that once in a while, picking up something physical and reading it. I mean, print book sales are still outpacing ebook sales, you know? And so I figured a print publication would still be in demand for this this medium, standard level, this medium level of content between the Mises Wire and the Quarterly Journal. So it's for people that are transitioning, that aren't quite ready. They don't want to read the Quarterly Journal and that type of academic stuff on a constant basis, but maybe they're looking for something a little bit more stimulating, maybe in the 2,500 to 5,000 word level in print that they can read, you know, that's not on their computer, which can hurt your eyes at the end of the day, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I did see a market need for this, and I've allocated my resources to try to fill that need. And so far, I've actually, I was guessing when I first started that the print subscriber base would be about 50 to 60%, but it's closer to 90%.
So you did make an economic calculation as an entrepreneur should.
It's more expensive to do print, mm-hmm. you know, so that's obviously something that there was more risk involved when I made that decision, you know.
Right.
So.
Well, we have to wrap up. What I'd like you to do, CJ, is maybe if you can summarize your thoughts about the entrepreneurial life, not to repeat what we've been talking about, but just as some way to leave the aspiring and practicing entrepreneurs out there about your thinking about the entrepreneurial life, and then we'll give the links for Austro-Libertarian magazine.
Well, let me just end by making it really practical. I don't think that people need to think of entrepreneurship as a Monday morning, I'm going to wake up, walk in, quit my job, and start a business. There's so many abilities and resources that we have at our disposal to start something slow, to recognize the skills that each of us have, even in our own jobs, if we don't have one because we're still in school or transitioning. All of us have something to offer, and doing something small with the technological resources that are almost free for the most part that people can start something with, just start small. You don't have to rebuild Amazon on Monday. You know, you can come over the years and just experiment. You know, just try different things, see what works and see what doesn't work. And I guarantee you that every one of the big success stories, entrepreneurs, have had dozens and dozens of failures before they were successful at whatever they're doing now.
Right. Yeah, I don't like the language of failure. It's learning.
It's learning.
But there's a character part of that, which is having the grit to go through the learning process. So where can people go for Austro-Libertarian magazine and your website?
Well, Austro-Libertarian.com is kind of my hub. And I publish, of course, my own reflections on a variety of different topics. And I also republish I have all original content. So if anybody, you know, contributes, what you see there is original content. And so I do publish a variety of other people too. And I do have three editors and several graphic designers that are part of the magazine side of things too. So it's not just myself, but AustroLibertarian.com is the easiest place to discover the magazine, the brand new podcast, and all the content in between.
And I can sign up for the magazine there?
AustroLibertarian.com/magazine is where you go direct to the magazine page. And I'm excited for the spring issue. We have a great, you know, 110-page, you know, physical print public, you know, issue coming out. And I'm very excited to distribute that to all the subscribers in April is when that's coming out.
That's exciting. And I'm excited about the prospects for entrepreneurship as a culture.
Yes.
That it can, as De Soto said, and you said, create the beneficent society. I see a trend towards it. I think entrepreneurial action, if we can explain it to people, is a much better solution than political action. And I hope that that's a trend that we can support at Economics for Entrepreneurs. So CJ, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.